I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest is Monica Gomez, and you probably recognize that name because she was the host for a long-running radio show called State of the Arts. And I thought we'd have her on the show because she is really a fascinating human being. She is an award-winning performer, a singer-songwriter. She is a writer and a poet. She is a teacher, a motivational speaker, and check this out. I hope I don't get her angry because she is a teacher of martial arts. Her book is called Expressercise, and it is a way to generate creative ideas for poetry and fiction and memoir, and she is a fascinating individual. We're glad to have her on the show. Monica, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed listening so much over the years, and it's a delight to be here.
Well, you know, when it comes to radio and talking about books in El Paso, you are really one of the innovators of that, you know, the whole movement.
Oh, well, thank you. That's a nice thing. I've been called a lot of things, and an innovator is one of the nicer ones, actually.
You had a show for how many years?
Seven and a half. I was hosting State of the Arts.
State of the Arts, yeah. And that became, you know, kind of a very important show for information on literature and art and happenings around town. Why did you quit?
Well, you know, 7.5 years is a good spell. And there just comes a point where I feel like there's more that needs to be done. There's a lot of young artists and movements and things that I didn't feel I was connecting with as much as I should, and I need to represent those. And any station needs a younger audience as well. And so a little energy fading, plus I had projects that were just, I ran out of back burners. For all the stuff I had going, I needed the time.
You know, and 7 years is a good time, amount of time. I've been doing this show now for 4 years. I think this is on the fifth. Mm-hmm. And I could see myself after 7 years saying, you know what, this has been fun, but it's time for me to move on.
Yeah.
Especially vis-a-vis the experience of getting older. I just turned 53.
Oh, and okay, we're not going to go
Daniel. 53 is the new 43. I understand that. 50 isn't as old as it used to be when I was a kid. Back when I was a kid, 50 was old.
Hey, baby, I got you by a decade, okay? So don't talk to me about that.
But what I find myself doing, first of all, in my 50s, I enjoy life a lot more than I did in my 40s and my 30s, especially my 20s, when turmoil was just part of my identity, you know, my thoughts And I find myself actually thinking about living in a quiet place outside of the city, away from people. Do you find that now that, you know, you're done with radio, that you crave that retreat and that silence to finish what I'm sure is going to be a fantastic book of poems that I know you're working on?
Oh, thank you. Actually, I have always had that. People sometimes assume, I think, that public figures, since I've appeared on TV and or radio over the years, a lot of folks assume that if you have a public face in any way, that you're just a totally 100% right. gregarious, 24/7 kind of person. Nothing could be further from the truth. I really need my complete isolation time. And sometimes for me, social situations are more comfortable if I have a job to do.
That makes sense.
A specific function. I'm not good at small talk. And sometimes I'll walk into a big function and I'll turn around and leave if I don't have a job to do.
You know, I completely understand. I think a lot of creative people are that way. And because we creative people express themselves so well, there is that expectation that they're going to be the life of the party when really they're like the wallflowers.
I find myself staring at the floor
constantly.
Tiles and hemming and hawing and just unable to engage. And it's just like, wow, this is painful.
Right, for me.
Much less for the person I'm trying to talk to. It's
And that's interesting that you say that, you know, you're much more comfortable in social situations when you have a function. And it reminds me of my friend in college. He was a really very good-looking young man, Native American. He was the head of the Native American club at the university and very, very well liked and just very sweet, but he could not go to any of the events that he helped organize, that we organized together, unless he had his camera. And he would take pictures
and
publish them in the Indian newspaper, the Native American newspaper.
I totally understand.
And it allowed him to go up to people. It allowed him to flirt. It allowed him to interact. It allowed him to
network. That was his interface, was that camera, the lens. It's I think I'm going to start doing that, maybe. No film, just a camera.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the advantage of having a camera when you go into a social event is, and you're blatantly taking pictures, you know, to document the event, is everybody wants to look good in your eyes.
That is true. That is true. And that's, and I have to say that in, you know, whether it's a camera or a microphone, it brings out a certain element in people that they wish to share with you.
Absolutely.
And so it's a neat way to live, to interface with people.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Expressercise, this incredible compilation, this book that you put together, of a creative writing workbook with exercises and broken up into different categories, which oftentimes are based on the source of inspiration or the source of creativity, and you kind of help writers find that source. Tell us about the book, how it came about.
Well, the book is, I think it has 15 different sections, I believe, and in each section there are the kind of essays on a way of looking at something that poses questions, and I use a lot of definitions. Whenever there's a word that might derail someone's comprehension, I love words and vocabulary. Tricky words are bolded, and then off to the side there are definitions of the words straight out of the dictionary to help clarify the meanings, because sometimes, I want to enrich language, but I also wanted to make the book utterly accessible, have no impediments. And even as I'm reading along, I find that going back to the word sources, I learn more about the actual meaning of the word, too. It goes much deeper than I thought. So it empowers the words themselves. And then there are a series of very simple questions that would prompt a writing exercise for the individual. And it can be used as a workbook. It has lines in it so that an individual can actually write in the book. But I think the next generation of the book, in fact, I'm working on, and this is one of the reasons I left State of the Arts, was to finish the Spanish translation, which is now I'm reformatting it and taking out the lines, so it's just a slimmer document.
Are you translating it yourself?
No, I had a professional translator, but I'm going through and making sure that the translation is as true to the intent as it can possibly be. And it sounds like the book is becoming more of a teacher's resource.
Right, yeah.
So in that regard, no need for all those lines, and we'll save some paper. But it begins with bringing down the resistance to expressing oneself. And of all the different populations I've worked with, I started specializing over the years with incarcerated juveniles. And I recognize in these kids, occasionally you'll have a low IQ as an issue, but oftentimes very high IQs, but learning disabilities or very much risk takers. This is a real treasure of humanity that is not always well directed. We're lucky in El Paso to have our juvenile probation department is one of the finest in the state of Texas, if not in the country. It's a model in the way that the juveniles are handled. And so I'm honored to have been working with them over the years. And I see that in my own two children, as they were going through school, very bright, quirky, amazing individuals, and the system was not always kind. And so it's kind of right out of that issue with my children, I really feel a drive to reclaim any kid that feels disenfranchised. And I want them to express themselves.
What you're also saying is that the creative process is not just a way to access the inner poet, or not just a way to generate creative ideas for poetry or fiction, but really it's a way of looking at how we live our lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the crazy part, these kids have gotten in trouble because of por la vida loca, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm not going to go take the message that, okay, time to jettison all of that risk-taking behavior, everything that you are, hide that crazy self, stay inside the lines, go to college, get it all perfect, and come out the other side. I couldn't do that. Why would I preach that?
You know, and the whole idea of doing something creative and seeking approval for it, like a child drawing something and bringing it to his or her parents, and then the parents put it on the refrigerator, or, you know, it's some sort of creative act. I teach in an MFA program, creative writing department here, and often when I ask students what compelled them to become writers, it starts with the third grade. They wrote a story in the third grade or the sixth grade or some grade, and the teacher read it in front of class.
Feedback. Positive feedback.
Yeah, and it's that acceptance. It really is fundamental to the human experience. You can't,
absolutely.
You can't not want to be accepted.
Anybody that claims that they haven't tracked every single little dart or barb or harpoon and haven't tracked every single gold star, compliment, smile, pat on the shoulder— oh, baloney. Yeah. We track every single one of those.
And even if we're not consciously remembering it, it becomes part of the way that
absolutely.
We see ourselves.
We have associations right. with those things. Even the very words that were used, they stay with us. That's right, our landscape. Right. That's our internal landscape.
The flip side of the coin to that impulse to be accepted, you know, to put it in other words, although you don't need to use these words specifically, but to be praised for our creative work, for our drawings, for our poems, for our fiction. I, you know, like I said, I work with a lot of students and they really seek praise. They seek affirmation. But the flip side of that is that writers, artists, creative types, those who are engaging in creativity, I imagine even the juveniles who for the first time are sharing something that they've done creatively that expresses themselves, the first time they expressorize with you, it must be very, very delicate situation to not want to shut them down or to shut off their creativity. In other words, you have to be really sensitive.
Very much so.
You are very, very popular in the Tumble Words writing series when you teach those classes.
That is a sacred space to me. I love that place.
How do you deal with writers who perhaps need a little bit of help on a piece that they're working on, but you don't want to discourage them?
Well, to back up just a touch, it's such an arduous process for anyone who dares to show their creative self in any way to detach from the praise and know when your creation is solid and has integrity, to know that that's something in you that resonates, whether it's praised or not.
And that it matters.
That's
I remember when I...
Huge journey.
When I first started writing, there was a Chicano literary contest at UC Irvine, and I entered it and didn't win and thought about giving up writing. And next year I says, if I don't win, I'm going to quit writing.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
I've been through that with... I mean, contests are tough. I did my songwriting time, and that's a whole other deal, but I used to compete in some songwriting competitions, and boy, those are soul killers.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't get any feedback, nothing puts it in perspective. That'll wipe you out. Yeah. And all of that has informed my work then with the juveniles, where the very first thing that I try to play on in anyone is that creative self is inherently uncomfortable. It's the same thing that makes you leap out and want the attention and withdraw from it, just cringe simultaneously, afraid that you'll get negative attention.
Right.
So it's simply crazy, and it's wonderful, and you can't tame it. It is untamable by nature. So one of the things artists commit to in this world is living with discomfort to a certain degree, because you're always giving birth. So it's never easy. So when I'm actually working at Tumble Words, one of the things there is that we really don't so much critique as just give people a chance to write and to immediately give voice to read aloud. Sometimes you'll get a positive response. People will say something nice. There is never a negative of any kind, never. It just isn't done because it's a space where... You took the chance, you read it aloud, you're already doing good right there. And you get to listen to other people and the feedback. So we're not really critiquing so much as just witnessing each other's growth.
A good friend of mine, I'm sure you know her, is Asu Dominguez, Azucena Dominguez. She's she's done some poetic license segments here. She goes a lot.
She's a regular.
And one of the things, I haven't been to one myself, but I know that it's very strongly community-based and that you have writers who are putting together, you know, very simple sentences to express themselves in, you know, in an honest way, especially encouraged by teachers like you. And then you have those who have MFAs and who have books published, sitting in the same
Bobby Bird shows up for a workshop the other day,
and I think that's fantastic.
And he's just reading along with the rest of us, you know, and you've got all kinds of folks in there. Yeah, it's a very special gathering place.
So I'm looking at your webpage, expressercise.com, and it shows the parts of your book, Expressercise, which, you know, I love that title.
Do you really?
It sounds a little kitschy, but then it just kind of sticks to you.
I came up, I thought, well, what would work? And, you know, and then I even... in the Expressor
Size. It's up there with Jazzercise. You realize that.
I know. It's way too close. But I thought, what would combine these two things? And I had to come up with something. It was website driven because you have to come up with something that has not been established before. And I Googled and Googled, and believe it or not, Expressor Size with C-I-S-E, the way exercise is actually spelled, was taken. So
I can't believe it.
It's mine is C-I-Z-E. Now, how cool is that? Oh, gosh. So what
I like it. It makes me want to get my pen and start doing calisthenics, literary calisthenics.
Well, I worry about you, but that's okay. Well, no, the title I really wanted was just Write Answers, W-R-I-T-E, Answers. And that was...
Taken.
I Googled that, and it turned up everywhere. So the combination of Expressercise with a Z, Write Answers, was not taken. So you talk about a convoluted website-driven title. But there
well,
she blows.
It works.
All right,
it's
thanks.
Expressercise.com. You have the sections of the book. I'm just going to read a few of the headings. Language as Art, The Five Senses, Body Language, Warrior or Victim. Warrior or Victim... it says, examining your heroes, a warrior mentality includes self-care, the price of thinking like a victim. Can you explain this?
Yes.
Because I'm with you.
Lots of different sources behind this. First, I've studied martial arts ever since I was in high school when I took karate and then taught it for a while and then set that aside. And then a number of years ago, discovered Tai Chi and have been studying and now teaching Tai Chi with Ray Abeta, the Texas School of Tai Chi up on the west side of El Paso. And it is the most amazing body of work and deals with a Taoist approach to things. Not a religious thing, but definitely a spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. Deals with a warrior ethos. I've always been fascinated by the kind of training that goes into everything from the ancient samurai to today's special forces to, and this is something that's real important again for the juveniles, especially the males, some of the females, that need to be a hero. Mm-hmm. And it's a fundamental desire. It goes back to that excitement of being seen and performing and doing something so good that you are hailed by everyone. Man, I want to cultivate that. But I also want to cultivate a way of doing it that's not so destructive to the whoever ends up as the hero in the end. So how can we do that in our daily lives? So then another little aside, once upon a time I had a brief exposure to something called the Course in Miracles. I sat in on I was actually paid to sing, to do a little performance as part of this Course in Miracles that was being presented by...
I'm usually paid not to sing.
Well, I won't go there. So anyway, I got to sit in for free on this seminar, and the line that stuck with me out of the whole day was, beware the tendency to perceive yourself as a victim. And that's a really powerful statement. So I've woven that into my teaching, even to the point of, you know, how many 007 movies we have had. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're still going. They're still making them. Well, 007 is a kind of this suave, cool character who you can see 007 getting a manicure and a pedi, you know, and a massage. Self-care is not foreign to this person. Mm-hmm. That is like that has made this character endure, drawing a rough parallel, as opposed to Rambo, for example. How many Rambos did we get? Three?
Right.
I mean, that's a self-destructive, in agony kind of warrior who has never resolved terrible pain and cannot allow himself creature comforts. I'm not sure. I should see the movies again, I guess, but I don't think he ever even had a significant relationship. no Petty or Manny there. Just can't see it. And so there's two different kinds of warriors there. One endures, the other expires. And this is something that these kids need to know, that it's okay to take care of yourself.
Not just kids. We all need to know
yes.
that. Because you know what underlies that concept, you know, and is articulated in different ways by, you know, if you really kind of the way you think about yourself is going to be how you're going to produce, not just creatively, but also just in life in general.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you think of yourself as the victim, you are so brilliant. Your mind is so amazing that you will be a victim.
Oh, yes. Whatever you decide, you're right. That's what you are. Plus, the kind of worst part is that's what you're selling.
Right.
When
Absolutely.
People take in your stuff.
And you know, we're concerned about writing here. I'm sure you've encountered this before. You know, I teach, like I said, in an MFA program, and I am... I have carte blanche to be brutal to my students.
Oh, but you're not, are you?
And they expect it. They expect it.
Well, no, it is good. It's a gift.
Yeah, they don't want... It's a gift. You know, one of the best poetry teachers that I've ever encountered was Philip Levine, and he was brutal in the workshop, and people left there crying, you know? And that's not something you would want to do at a community level, but in the graduate seminar, there are sometimes when, you know, a writer's ego might get in the way, or a writer's... might impede their own abilities, their own talents, and they're mm-hmm. talented. Bernard Malamud says that, you know, I write because I'm good at it. They're dedicating mm-hmm. their life to writing because they're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a question of that. But nonetheless, what you find is one of the very first things you have to eliminate from a writer who is committed to writing fiction or poetry is the victim story. The victim story has absolutely no depth. The victim story might be about a very important issue. It might be about misogyny. It might be about racism. It might be about police brutality. But if it is a victim story, there's absolutely no hope. There's absolutely
no growth.
There's only good or evil.
Mm-hmm. It's totally polarized.
Yeah, and it kind of closes off your creativity.
Dead end.
How do you deal with that when you encounter somebody who is in that kind of headspace? How do you help them get out of it? Because I imagine a lot of people can be there.
I don't know that I have worked with someone one-on-one long enough to go there. There are a series of questions, but you know, as a teacher, and boy, teaching is an art form.
Well, you're not only a teacher, you're a motivational speaker.
Always.
You make people feel better. How do you do it?
You have to study the individual and measure the degree of receptivity, first of all, because mm-hmm. if you have someone who's totally dedicated to being a victim, being in the dark place, if I only have a two-hour workshop to go, I can't sacrifice the experience of the rest of the people
Absolutely.
To work with that one individual.
Yeah.
But what I can do is measuring, you know, studying body language, studying the individual, the movement of their eyes, the everything about them. You know this. You tap in, and as you open up every pore you have to figure out how to solve this best, sometimes it's by comparing and contrasting with the work of the other writers, mm-hmm. different ways of looking at the things, making sure that any praise for the attitude in the piece is very measured.
Right, right.
That it's, yeah.
You give seminars in front of sometimes hundreds of people, so it's not like you can take time to individually
address everybody. And really, a workshop is a few people where you really can interface.
But I'm talking about your motivational speaking.
You have talked to
huge audiences.
Yeah, those kinds of things, there's not one-on-one. I mean, it's just a matter of you pretty much get to say what you got to say. But when you're working with the individual, the writing is so... Sometimes just a straight shot is the way to go. I remember when I was a young woman foolish in more ways than I can count, and I thought I could write. And I could, but I couldn't really write. I couldn't communicate very well. And I was told by a professor my writing was turgid.
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 No.
Well, harumph. Well, no, I went and I took that to heart, and it hurt like hell. And I made the change. And every time I lost a songwriting contest, I went and looked, okay, what won and why?
Right.
And I could either decide that I was somebody's victim or I was a student.
I'm talking to Monica Gomez, teacher of writing, a singer, songwriter, motivational speaker, and former host of State of the Arts here in El Paso for 7 years. You are an incredibly creative person. You're working on a book of poetry right now, and you've been living in El Paso most of your life. I think mm-hmm. you were 7 years old when you came here from Mexico.
No, I was actually three.
Three,
when,
okay.
When the family moved over, I was naturalized at seven.
All right. Tell me a little bit about the connection between the El Paso landscape and creativity itself.
Oh, gosh. Well, they say mystics repair to the desert. I had no choice. So I think some of us become mystics. Maybe it's just dehydration. I'm not sure.
I like that.
Too much time
in the
sun.
If you think about it, dehydration, lack of water, lack of spirit, you fall into yourself,
yeah,
you collapse,
yeah,
and you're reborn.
Delusions, illusions. So many people, of course, when we're young, we think getting out of here is the thing to do.
Oh, yeah. El Paso, when I first moved here, had an incredible self-deprecation attitude.
Oh, big time.
Inferiority
big time.
Complex.
And then
it's getting better.
Well, and then I had the pleasure of meeting real writers, real poets, people who in my eyes were just jaw-dropping, amazing. Leslie Allman.
Right. I remember her. She was teaching when I first started here.
Phyllis Price. You know, Leslie lived out in a little house off of Alvarez Road. In
right next to Phyllis, right?
Yes,
if I
sir.
Recall correctly.
Yes, sir.
Like, and ranches
that's,
with horses. It was so beautiful out
you
there.
You got it. You got it. And I would go out there and visit with them, and we would write and read to one another. And, of course, we did some programs together, reading our poetry. And I was always honored to be in their company. And these women absolutely fed off the land for its inspiration and the horses, which it's easy to do. Now they're neither one living there anymore, and I have a horse and am out there in that general area riding. Yes. and connecting with a lot of that amazing energy still. But they were the ones that kind of awoke me to the fact that my music, which is what I was writing at the time, or lyrics, was just infused with the imagery of the land. And it's where I come from. I'm an animal from this part of the world. Born a little further down south, but basically all my senses have had all of the stimulation from this part of the planet to feast on. And that's how I formulate my thoughts. That's what helps me express what's going on in my internal landscape is the external. So that's, what was the question?
Well, you know, I'm just really interested in how El Paso tends to create a lot of, disproportionately, I think, in terms of its size, a lot of writers, a lot of important published writers, and a lot of, in the writing community here, it's just amazing. I mean, any night a week, there's open mics and all that.
Yeah.
And just, I guess what I was trying to get you to confirm for me was how amazing this landscape is.
It is.
To develop artistically.
There's a confluence, if I recall correctly, do not remember my source, but I believe there's a convergence of about seven different geographic faults here. The mountain, the river, and who knows what else. We have a border that's like a seashore where there's certain things don't take root because there's constant washing along this seashore. But I love the seashore. You can't not create when things are constantly changing. And we are forced to look at ourselves. We don't have this homogenous little town where everybody's pretty much the same and nobody checkmates each other. We have a wonderfully creative and divisive community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, between or among, I should say, El Paso, New Mexico, Texas, New Mexico, Juarez, the military, which brings in a whole other element of people who are seasoned in a lot of ways. The university, of course. We've got so many elements that are all converging right here. It's great. Instead of a single pane of glass that doesn't refract or change the light at all, we've got this shattered, colorful pile of shards that are all different colors, lots of sharp edges. You know, it's fascinating.
And you know what? A lot of different horizons. You go from one place to another, and the perspective just completely changes.
Yes.
And I would give a warning to anybody who is a writer or artist. If you pass through El Paso, you might want to stay. Monica, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire. You know, time went by so quick. We'll have to have you on the show again to continue our discussion, because I still haven't asked you about Stella. We'll save that for next time, the guitar you got in eighth grade.
Oh, God.
And so many other things. And we'll talk about your book of poems when it comes out, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much.